start with the customer and work back, whether it's they're buying gold bullion off you, they're buying an engagement ring off you, they're renting a safe deposit box. How can you make life that little bit easier for the customer?
Welcome to episode 63 of the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox. This is the first interview in season three, and you can tell I'm a little bit excited as I'm chatting to Seamus Fahey, who has an unbelievable story to tell. In the coming weeks, we're going to hear from some great entrepreneurs, including Brody Sweeney, Joe Davey, and Rory O'Connor. But today, it's all about Seamus and his story. In this pod, you're going to learn three main things, along with Seamus's fascinating personal story. Number one, you're going to learn how to enter an industry you have zero experience in and make it a huge success. Number two, how to get a waitlist of hundreds of customers before you even open. And number three, how having a natural curiosity and always asking why can lead you to founding not one, but three companies. Here we go. This is my chat with Seamus Fahey. Enjoy. Seamus, welcome to the pod.
Thank you.
We're sitting in the very luxurious surroundings of your office here. I haven't been in an office this fancy, I think, ever.
Yeah, well, these are our Voltaire Diamond showrooms. So, yeah, this is where we meet all our customers. It's all by appointment only. So, yeah, well, as you know, we're located at the top of Grafton Street, three beautiful showrooms. We're not at retail level. So, you know, we don't have the overheads of a typical jewellery shop, which is great. So we pass on those savings to our customers.
That's a very polished answer already. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. It's like a five-star hotel. So jumping back, where did this all start? Where did Voltaire start? Or how did you even get started on your entrepreneur journey?
It goes back to my time in London. You know, I was trading equities and foreign exchange. And I decided at the time I wanted to move back to Ireland. And that was 12 years ago. And a friend of mine mentioned to me that, you know, he had a couple of diamond dealer friends from Antwerp. So I actually met these two guys at a wedding and I was sitting beside them, mentioned that I was thinking of moving back to Ireland and spoke about my background. And they said, why don't you get into the diamond business? And I said, well, tell me more. And he said, well, we own a diamond trading company in Antwerp, which is, you know, the hub for diamond trading in Europe. And they said, we'll supply you with the diamonds. But they said, we've seen this model before in other places where it's by appointment. You eliminate the overheads of a typical jewellery shop, which are massive, you know, high rent rates, insurance, security, etc. So if you can do it by appointment, you're not on the high street. There's no reason why you can't pass on the savings to your customers and you'll have a viable business. So they sent me some prices. The following week. And then I visited every jewellery shop in central London and Dublin. And I went in and said, I'm looking for a one carat F colour VS2 clarity. You know, what will you charge? And then I looked at what they were charging and I looked at what I could buy the diamonds for from my Antwerp suppliers. And I could see a substantial margin. So I said, right, okay, the margin is substantial versus the high street. So at the time, we were selling at 30% less than the high street. So I was making a small margin per sale and everybody was happy. The customer was happy and I was happy.
When you told me that story in and we're having a coffee, it sounds like the start of Snatch. That sounds like something that would happen in a movie. So what, how did you even consider diamonds though? You just kind of jumped into it. You'd know, had you any background in this area at all?
None whatsoever. But I had been trading oil for 12 years. I worked with the state oil company for 12 years. So I was buying and selling crude oil and petroleum products. So I was used to buying and selling. So when these gentlemen mentioned diamonds, I said, why not? So I did the research. And obviously, because I don't have a history of, you know, being in the jewellery business, I decided I needed to study about gemology. So I was in London at the time. So I registered for a course in gemology with the GIA, which is the Gemological Institute of America. So I studied with them by night, got my qualification. As I mentioned earlier, did all the research and decided, right, okay, there's a business here, you know, but people have to trust you. You know, so, you know, an engagement ring is one of the biggest spends anyone has in their lives. So, you know, you got to trust Seamus Fahey. Who is he? All the rest of it. So built a website together, as I said, studied with the GIA. So, and then at the time, launched the business. I had some friends in media, so managed to get some fantastic PR. And then just social media after that, I was very active on Facebook at the time and got the brand out there. And then obviously, once you have a customer, you know, they tend to tell their friends, oh, where did you get your engagement ring? And it grew from there.
I always say that to people, why don't more people just think very simply, buy it for X, sell it for Y, take the margin. Everyone's all about these massive, crazy, big moonshot ideas when often the best businesses are started like that. So you just took the idea. You just literally saw it in London and then went deep. How long did the course take in gemology, or how long did it take you to get going? Because the diamond and the whole jewelry industry seems very difficult to get into. It seems like a very high-end business that it'd take a lot of money to get into.
No, not a huge amount, you know, because at the time, believe it or not, I was calling to people's houses. Now, today we're in beautiful offices here just off the top of Grafton Street. But when I set up Voltaire Diamonds, I used to actually visit the customer. So I'd go to them. I had a wide selection of engagement ring styles, but they were all silver and cubic zirconia. They looked real, but they weren't. But I had a couple of real diamonds as well, so people could see the real sparkle and scintillation in a real diamond. So started there. And after about 6 months, with the PR, with the sales, the brand started to grow and grow and grow. So eventually I needed kind of I didn't have the time to be calling to people's houses anymore. So what I did was, at the time I was, there was a private members club in Dublin called Residence, and they had meeting rooms if you were a member. And the membership wasn't prohibitive at the time. So I started meeting clients in the private members room in Residence. And, you know, that was phase two of the business. So all my customers I used to meet there. And I operated out of there for at least a year and a half. And then it changed ownership, and the new owners realized this guy is operating a business out of our meeting rooms here.
Who's this other tenant? Where does he go every day? Exactly. I love that story. You told me that before. I love that story about the hustle of just scrappy startups. Like, no matter what the industry, there is a way of hustling your way into it.
Absolutely.
There's a way of just being smart, just thinking about it logically and using what you have.
Yeah.
No point crying about what you don't have. Yeah. Oh, I don't have a jewelry shop. I don't have these fancy offices. You just went door to door, and then, okay, what's the next phase? Residence was beautiful. I remember that place, like, what a place to meet people.
Oh, I had the cheapest offices in Dublin, right on St. Stephen's Green. But I knew it was going to come to an end, and yeah, it did. And after that, I moved to the next stage where I rented serviced offices and spent some time at the other side of St. Stephen's Green and then on Harcourt Street. And then we moved in here about 5 years ago, and we're on a long lease here. So we're happy out here now.
It's a beautiful location. Did you ever have the imposter syndrome? That feeling of, a lot of entrepreneurs get it, I get it all the time, of you go into a new industry or a new niche in your industry and you feel like, oh, I actually don't know what I'm doing here. They're going to know I don't know what I'm talking about.
Not really, because I did the research. I studied gemology, so I knew exactly what I was doing. So for me, then after that, it's all about customer service. Mm. You know, the customer experience, that's critical. Like, it's one of the happiest times of a couple's life is picking that engagement ring. So the customer experience had to be amazing.
Mm.
And thankfully, to this day, we're still offering amazing customer experience, and with thousands of happy customers.
Bring me back, because you said it almost as an aside, you traded oil. Tell me a little bit about that, because that's a pretty unusual start.
I studied business in University of Limerick, and it was a 4-year course, but there was 2 6-month periods of work experience called co-op.
Mm, a fellow UL grad, I did it as well. I was an Intel and leak slip, chemical and gases buyer. I wasn't as glamorous as you now.
Yeah, my second co-op was with Irish National Petroleum, which was the state oil company at the time. They had one oil refinery in East Cork called Whitegate. So I was working in head office in Dublin. So I was there, you know, for the 6 months, you know, doing a little bit of analysis for them and all the rest of it. And after my 6 months in co-op, thankfully they said, listen, when you graduate, we'd be delighted to have you back. So I went back to college for the final 6 months and then started with them straight away and spent 12 years with them.
Wow. That's a pretty interesting start to your career. So how do you trade oil? What's that all about?
Well, literally it was buying crude oil from the North Sea. We were actually buying from Norwegian oil fields. Mm-hmm. It was being shipped down to Whitegate Oil Refinery, processed. And when you process a barrel of crude oil, you get various products out. So gas oil, jet fuel, petroleum, fuel oil, LPG, etc. So I was buying the crude oil and selling all the products into the Irish market. Some of the products needed refining further. They didn't have the technology for that in Whitegate, so we exported that. That was the fuel oil. Okay. So I was doing crude oil for a while, and then I was doing petroleum products. And I really enjoyed the petroleum products because I was dealing with all the major oil companies in Ireland and the small independents. So that was exciting.
Because that's one of the industries you don't even think Ireland has. You don't really associate Ireland with like the Dubai or the Arab Emirates. You just think, you know, everything's imported. So actually there's oil processed here in Ireland.
Oh yeah, to this day, yeah, approximately 30% of the demand for petroleum products in Ireland comes from Whitegate oil refineries to this day.
There you go. We're having fun and we're learning.
There you go.
So you must have learned a huge amount about sales and trading in that time. So how did you pick up those skills? Were you mentored or was it just something you learned over time?
No, it was just something I learned over time. You know, kind of for the first probably 6 months when I was full-time at Irish National Petroleum, I was listening to the traders. So listening to everything they were doing. And, you know, eventually I started picking up the phone myself when they were busy and kind of talking to the customers, and the powers that be in there said, right, okay, let's promote him. And yeah, I took it step by step.
And then you went to London.
Yeah, so Irish National Petroleum was eventually privatized. It was taken over by an American oil company, and that changed hands again 6 months later. And it was taken over by a huge American oil company called ConocoPhillips. And at the time, I had a choice. I could take the voluntary redundancy package, having been there 12 years, or I could have moved over to London into their head office in London and trade. The job they were giving me was trading gasoline. So I was there probably, I had to make up my mind after 6 months. So you either take the full-time job after 6 months in London or you take the redundancy package.
They were pulling out of Ireland. They were shutting it down.
Yeah, they were closing the head office. Okay. And they were going to operate a Whitegate oil refinery from London. So as I said, I had to make that decision. Do I take the voluntary redundancy package, which was very generous at the time, or do I work full-time with ConocoPhillips? And I remember one day being in ConocoPhillips, and I was used to working in a very small office, you know, 20 staff in Dublin, where, you know, one day you're making the tea, you know, the next day you're buying $100 million crude oil cargo. Yeah. You know, which was fine. But I remember one day being in ConocoPhillips and I had clients coming in and I wanted to book a meeting room. And the office manager says to me, what's your cost center number? And I said, what do you mean? He said, what's your cost center number? You need to give us your cost center number if you want teas and coffees. You know, it had to be allocated against a certain department. And at that stage, I kind of said, do you know what? Yeah, I think I'll take the voluntary redundancy package. So I did that. And no regrets.
Had you one eye on what you were going to do next for yourself? Like, it sounds like the Dublin office was very entrepreneurial, almost like working in a small startup.
Yeah.
Was that something that bred into you, or were you always thinking, you know what, I really want to work for myself someday?
I really didn't want to be working with a big bureaucratic company. And I think that the cost center number kind of, you know, kind of hit it home. You know, it's time to move on.
So you took the new job, and were you always, I suppose what I'm trying to drive at is, what spurred you to go into Voltaire? Because it sounds like you had a very stellar career in quite a lucrative industry, I'd imagine. So what, because it's a big jump. It's a big jump from where you were to where you went.
Well, I kind of always harbored ambitions to work for myself, you know, and when this opportunity came, you know, when I met these two diamond dealers, and I was always good at sales, or at least I thought I was, you know, I said, why not? You know, having studied the market, there was nobody else, there was no one really doing it in Dublin. There was one other guy that was doing diamonds by appointment, but that was it. And I said, right, I see an opportunity here. If it doesn't work out, okay, I can always, you know, send my CV out there again and go back to oil if I wanted to. But I said, you know what, I'm going to give this a go.
A lot of people struggle with that decision of leaving a big company into, you know, going for yourself. When you did that, was it a feeling of relief? Was it a feeling of something you've always wanted to do? You know, because a lot of people message in after listening to someone on the podcast and they're like, I'm in my big job and I enjoy it, but I have a mortgage to pay. How do you leverage those fears? Because it's a question we get all the time. After every episode, people message in going, oh, that's great, but I just don't know how to make that decision.
Well, my attitude was, I've got very little to lose. Mm. You know, I said, you know, having studied the market, I saw there was a gap in the market. You know, most people were used to going to a jewelry shop, you know, in Dublin city centre or wherever, you know, and buying it, buying that special purchase there. And for a lot of people at the time, it was a stressful experience. You know, a guy going into a jewellery shop to buy an engagement ring, it's a stressful experience. And if I could take that stress out of it, you know, by having, you know, calling to your house or meeting you in a hotel foyer or whatever, you know, I'm taking that stress out of it, you know. And that's thankfully what Voltaire Diamonds did.
And how did you scale to where you are today? Because I'd imagine there's probably a lot of equity up front, is there? Or how do you scale up from, say, a one-man band on your own to where we are sitting in this beautiful private showroom today?
Well, I did it slowly. You know, initially for the first probably 3.5 years, it was me on my own. And then I just couldn't deal with the amount of appointments. I was working 7 days a week, you know, so I employed one other person to do the sales with me. And then it literally just grew from there. And then eventually I needed another person and another person. Mm. And now we've got 4 staff here.
That's the best way, the bootstrapping way. When we met for a coffee, I identified a lot of what you've done and my principles about business is just bootstrapping, keeping it lean, logic, using just your brain to just think things through before jumping in. Talk to me a little bit about the PR, because you said that at the start, the PR was a huge defining factor. I think a lot of people look to digital first and jump in and think, oh, I have to be A1 on digital first. But PR still plays a huge role in business.
Not for Voltaire Diamonds, it was huge at the time. You know, I had a couple of friends who worked in the Irish Times and the Irish Independent and told them my story. And I still remember the headline in the Irish Independent, former oil trader to become king of diamonds. You know, and I still have
that. I love that.
I still have that on my wall at home. So, and obviously, you know, how many people read the Irish Independent, the Irish Times? You know, so that gives you credibility, yes. You know, and that was obviously all over my website and on social media and all the rest of it. But yeah, PR is critical.
Credibility, that's the key word, and that's what you can't buy that, you can't get that on, you know, from a tweet or whatever. The Irish Times saying, yes, Seamus Fahy is the real deal, here he is, this is what he's doing. It's, we had the exact same, we got in the Irish Times, and from that day to this, we still get business from that.
Yeah, but you have to back it up then after that. Okay, you've got the PR, but then once you start meeting the customers, you know, you got to back it up with quality service and all the rest of it. And then it grows from there.
You hinted at it there, though, with the headline, you know, former oil trader to become a king of diamonds. It needs a hook. It needs an interesting story. I think a lot of startups don't get that. They're like, oh, we've got this great new product. Oh, my God, it's amazing. And then they're mystified when it's just a dud. They don't get any coverage because it's just not that interesting.
Sure, sure.
People, you need the narrative. So how did you create that narrative? Obviously, you lived an interesting life. That's key, first of all. But did you work with someone to help you craft the story about yourself?
No, it was all friends of friends, you know, just literally knocking on doors. Mm. You know, do you know someone in the media? All the rest of it. Mm. But then, you know, when I set it up first, you know, everyone I met got a Voltaire Diamonds business card, you know, and friends used to joke with me, you know, Seamus Fahy, by the year 2020, everyone will have received his business card twice, you know, and that was literally it, you know, kind of just getting the brand out there all the time.
You have to. First couple of years, you just have to. We talked about it just before we kicked off in the pod. It's funny, because I mentioned you were coming on today. I'll mention when I'm producing the episode. I'll mention again when I'm about to put the episode live. I'll mention it when I put the... You have to keep... Because there's so much messaging flying around. We're bombarded by messages, you know, all day, every day on your phone, on your email. Cutting through the noise is difficult.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And another important thing with Voltaire Diamonds was, thankfully, we got several, you know, well, we've hundreds of them now, but positive reviews. Whether it's Google reviews, Facebook reviews, we use Trustpilot now. They're critical as well.
How do you get them? I think a lot of businesses are like, oh yeah, I just don't have much online. Do you go out and ask customers for them?
Yeah, generally if a customer, you know, purchases from us, we'll ask them, you know, if you do get time. We don't put pressure on them. It's up to you. If you want to give us a review, you can. If you don't, you don't. But thankfully hundreds do.
It's so important, though, just ask, because people are generally, as you said earlier, give people a great experience and it makes them happy, and just go a little bit above and beyond, because most customer service is awful. you know, you're used to poor customer service. Like, you know, in cafes and shops, you're generally used to just getting the bare minimum. So I think when you do go above and beyond, people remember.
If customers weren't happy with Voltaire Diamonds, we wouldn't have a business today because we're not on the high street. It's not like you're walking past and you see a lovely shop window and you see diamond rings in the window. Anyone walking past this, where we are right now, would not know we exist.
I walk past it.
Yeah. And you didn't know we existed. No. Yeah, exactly. So we don't have a shop front. So our shop front is word of mouth, positive reviews, that great PR, etc.
And similarly, people are very quick to give a negative review as well.
Oh, well, that's it as well. Yeah.
So take me on the journey then through Voltaire. You're 3 years on your own. Then you make a decision to hire someone else. How did you do that process? Because the first hire is always the hardest, I think. So how did you get that person?
When I look back on it now, it was a couple of people actually approached me. Yeah, one lady in particular had been working with one of the top jewellery shops in Dublin. She had seen the PR. She had heard about us. Because obviously when people are shopping for an engagement ring, they don't just go to Voltaire Diamonds. They'll call to our competitors on the high street, whatever. And this particular lady was working with one of the competitors and, are you talking to anybody else about this special purchase? Oh yeah, I've been to Voltaire Diamonds and I'm going to whatever other shops they were going to visit. So she kept hearing Voltaire Diamonds and she approached us.
Nice.
Approached me.
Did she get the job?
She did. Yeah. And she worked with me for a few years.
It's amazing. I always say that to people as well about CVEs and getting jobs. You know, do something different. Don't just apply when the job goes up. You always have to come out at a different angle. So when you took on that first person, did that help fuel the growth or were you at a point where you just couldn't handle anymore?
I couldn't handle anymore. I was literally working 7 days a week. And it's obviously a labor intensive job because you have to meet every customer face to face. So that took an awful lot of pressure off me because I was doing the buying, I was doing all the accounting, you know, looking after the various aspects of running a business. Mm. So no, my first hire took a lot of the pressure off me.
So you've three companies now?
Yeah.
Where did the second one come from?
Well, funnily enough, it's all linked to Voltaire Diamonds because when I moved back to London, I set up the company bank account, all the rest of it. I said to the bank, I'm going to need a safe deposit box as well because I'm going to have jewellery stock. You know, I'm going to have those loose diamonds that I didn't want to be storing in at home in a home safe or whatever. And I said, we don't offer safe deposit boxes anymore. Historically, we did, but we don't do it anymore. So I said, but there must be, do any of the other banks do it? And they said, as far as we know, they've withdrawn the service as well. And they had, because I contacted all the other banks. And then I realized there was no independent companies offering safe deposit boxes before. I decided then, no safe deposit boxes in Dublin. Did a little bit of research on that. I could see there was 20 of these facilities in London. And I said, okay, maybe there's an opportunity here. So I couldn't get a safe deposit box. So I obviously then had to take the risk of storing my valuables at home, which I wasn't very comfortable with. So I set up a website straight away called safedepositboxes.ie. And put together a very basic website saying, coming soon to Dublin, join our waiting list. And it was a basic form there. And almost immediately, we were getting inquiries. You know, so every day, I was seeing emails in my inbox going, when are you opening? Yeah, I'll take a box, all the rest of it. So at the time, I was concentrating on Voltaire Diamonds. But I was watching these emails coming in every day. I said, wow, okay, there's demand for this. So literally about 3 or 4 years later, myself and a friend of mine, David Walsh, who was in the advertising business, we kind of decided, I told him, right, these are all the inquiries. We know the demand is there. So right, now we need to do a bit of research on what's entailed in opening a safe deposit box facility. So we probably spent the next 6 to 9 months investigating latest false technology, where do you buy the safe deposit boxes, all about seismic sensors, motion sensors, CCTV systems, biometric access, all the rest of it. So what I did then was I visited independent safe deposit box facilities in London and said, right, I need a safe deposit box. What's involved? And, you know, these companies, they take you on a little tour of their facility. So I learned a lot from that. And probably another 6 months after that, we set up Murray & Vaults.
that story stuck with me. When you told me that over a coffee, that story of setting up the website, getting your wait list going, that's exactly what I did. That's exactly how I started my own business. So it resonates a lot with me. I can't remember where I read it about 8 or 9 years ago. And I was like, that's absolutely genius. And that's a great way of getting started.
Yeah. But and what was funny was, you know, the website was live for probably 3, even 4 years before we opened, but people were getting impatient, you know, because I said coming soon on the website.
Okay. You know, you're letting the demand build and build.
Yeah, so
and
the demand was building, but people were coming back to me 6 months later going, hey, you said you're coming soon. When is soon?
Okay.
You know, and so it was pent up demand. So
What triggered you to go, oh, do you know what? This has to be done. There's definitely enough demand here.
Well, we had hundreds and hundreds of inquiries.
Right.
And, you know, as I said, some of the inquiries that were coming back every couple of months, when are you opening? When are you opening? You know, and
how are you handling that? How are you kind of keeping them lukewarm to then get pissed off and just forget it?
Well, because I was so busy with Voltaire Diamonds, you know, and before we took the decision to actually do it, you know, I was just letting them build up.
Okay.
You know, but eventually then when we knew we were going ahead with it, we had found the premises in Dublin. I then contacted all those inquiries and said, great news. We've set a date. It's opening in September 2013. And that's what happened.
This is very like the diamonds. You no real background in it, but you just researched it, found the best in practice. How do you even set up a vault company though? How did you even like, so you did the tours and then how did you even know what you were looking for?
Well, one of the first things we did actually was we contacted insurance brokers because I knew from visiting the facilities in London that they were insured with Lloyd's of London. Mm. So I contacted Lloyd's of London. They put me in touch with brokers who specialized in safe deposit box facilities.
Okay.
So I sat down with them, had lunch with them and said, I'm opening a facility in Dublin. You know, what's required? And they said, okay, we've got in-house experts who can advise you on latest vault technology.
Interesting.
Et cetera. So before we decided, okay, we're building a vault, we had their advice.
Brilliant.
And the advice they were giving us met the criteria required by Lloyd's of London to insure us. So we took it from there.
I love that though. Getting outside experts who have a vested interest in the business.
Yeah, well, the insurance broker we met, you know, wanted our business. Yeah. And we gave him the business, you know, what once we opened and all the rest of it. So, but they gave us kind of all the specific details required, the type of seismic sensor, the type of CCTV required, the outside monitoring company requirements, etc.
That sounds like a lot of cash.
Yeah, each facility is expensive. Yeah. But listen, it's with safe deposit box facilities, it's a long-term investment. Mm. The payback is a number of years. Mm-hmm. But the beauty of the safe deposit box industry is once you have a customer, you tend to have that customer for life. You know, they tend to renew that box every year.
I was going to ask you that, like, who gets a box? Like, what kind of person? I suppose everybody, really.
Well, it's available to everybody and our smallest box right now costs just over €200 a year. So it's affordable.
Mm.
So if you've got valuables at home, whether it's jewellery, family heirlooms, important paperwork, gold bullion, silver bullion, €200 a year is very, very affordable for peace of mind.
I think you said it to me, it was like, you know, what couldn't be replaced? It's probably not even the real fancy stuff you think of. It's probably, you know, what can you never get back?
Yeah, yeah. It's, you know, we say to customers, you know, if God forbid your house burnt down tonight, what would you be devastated is gone?
Mm.
You know, and should that item be in a safe deposit box?
So how does it all work? Because I definitely only seen them in the movies. I haven't got the net worth yet, but for €200 a year, I might. But how does it all work?
Well, our vault is located in Burlington Road in Ballsbridge. We're in the basement of an office block. So once again, when you walk past, you don't know Merrion Vaults exists. Customers come in, they've swipe cards. We've got facial recognition technology. We've got biometric access. So only customers get into the vault. They're brought to their box then by a custodian and they slide out their tray. We've got 10 different box sizes. They slide out their tray and they go into a privacy room where there's no cameras. So we don't know what's in people's boxes.
I think it's probably worth investing just to feel like an absolute boss of walking in like that. It's like that line from Layer Cake, everyone likes to walk through a door marked private.
true.
So I kind of like you. I love your attitude of just like, yeah, new industry. Let's go learn everything about it and let's just roll it out. So when you were launching Merrion Vaults, it hadn't been done in Ireland before. It had been done by the big banks, obviously, but they'd kind of gone by the wayside. What was the process? Like, did people kind of go, what is this? Or do people instinctively know, okay, vaults are back?
Well, the good news was nobody else was doing it. Mm. So from that point of view, it was a great PR story. Mm. So once again, we employed a PR agency and thankfully we got huge PR. I remember we were opening in September and in July, we were on the front page of the business section of the Sunday Times and the Sunday Business Post.
Nice.
You know, Ireland's first independent safe deposit box facility opening in September. So that was huge. Mm. On top of that, my business partner, David Walsh, he owns an advertising business called Rebel Outdoor. So all the advertising you see in shopping centres around Ireland and in the UK, he owns those stainless steel bins. And on the side of those bins, there's advertising panels.
Okay.
So we were all over those, you know.
That can't hurt.
That summer. So we were getting the brand out there, yeah, through advertising and through PR. And you must remember, we had at that stage hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of inquiries through the website over the previous 3 or 4 years.
So you reach back out to all of them. Here you go. Here's your early access.
Absolutely. And approximately 90% of them still wanted boxes.
Mm. Was there anything about the whole process you kind of went, oof, this is a little bit tough?
Looking back, not really. You know, we got expert advice on everything. Mm. So we knew what we were doing was state of the art. It was latest technology. But customers' perception is critical. Mm. You know, so thankfully when people entered the vault, they went, wow. You know, they were blown away, you know, and they were happy with our protocols, our procedures, all the rest of it. So no, it was done right from the start.
Mm. You seem extremely process driven. Is that a fair estimate?
Absolutely. Particularly with the vaults, you know, we've got protocols for everything, you know, the opening procedure, the closing procedure, you know, we've got renewals, everything is a process. Mm. Not everything, but most of it is. You got to follow these rules, you know, and make sure everything is done. But when it comes to safe deposit box facilities, there's no shortcuts. Mm. You know, it has to be done right.
Is that something you took from your early career? Because you seem, even as a person, though, I know the businesses are very process driven, but you seem, because of the way you approach things and just how I'm kind of listening to your mind work, you seem very logical, step by step by step. Nothing is too big a barrier once you break it down.
No, and when it comes to the systems and the procedures and the processes, you know, and you touched on it when we met for a coffee. If you have to do something more than once, put a procedure in place. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's once off, deal with it. Yeah. But if it's something you're doing on a regular basis and you're doing it every second day, okay, we need a procedure for that. Mm-hmm. So our operating manual now in Merrion Vaults is getting thicker by the day. Mm-hmm. You know,
it's so important though. I think the girls that work with me are just blue in the face from listening to me say that exact thing, because very similar to yourself, started off my own for 15, 16 months and I just, it was in my head, and the pain I had of then creating processes after the fact. So it's definitely a great tip for any startup or any young entrepreneur, just start creating processes. It might seem like big corporate, but when you start hiring 1, 2, 3 people, that out of your head is so important.
I don't know if you watch The Prophet on CNBC.
I haven't.
With the entrepreneurs. His second name is Lemonis, but it's product, process and people.
Okay.
And he's seriously, everything is a process. Mm. So whether you're opening a kebab shop or you're opening a clothes shop or you're doing this, that or the other thing, there's a process involved.
Mm. Well, especially when customer service
Marcus
is everything.
Lemonis.
I'll definitely look him up. Someone actually messaged me yesterday going, any good entrepreneur documentaries and programs? I was like, I'll have to think about that. Yeah. But the process thing, it definitely is, it's key. I think it's a distinguishing factor, especially when customer service is so important. because they can't come in today and have a 5-star and then tomorrow have a 3-star because someone missed out a step in the middle. So how did you balance your time? Because being an entrepreneur is extremely taxing. You're working 7 days a week. Obviously, Voltaire, you'd scaled it up to you'd more people to rely on, but then you jumped into another business. So how did you leverage yourself between the two?
Well, thankfully, with Voltaire Diamonds now, we've got a great team here. So I'm not involved in the day-to-day sales anymore. I'm still involved in purchasing because I enjoy that. So I travel to London on a regular basis to the diamond district there. And all the big suppliers in Antwerp have offices in London. So I do most of the buying. But other than that, my colleagues here are doing the sales. So that takes most of the pressure off Voltaire Diamonds for me. So I'm able to concentrate on the vaults and growing the vaults. And that's what I really enjoy doing, because we now have 6 safe deposit box facilities. As you know, we've 1 in Dublin, we've got 5 in the UK, and we're still growing the business in the UK. Last week, we just signed a lease there for another city in the UK. Mm. And we're also looking at mainland Europe now. So that's taking up most of my time now, the business development.
You've just launched you're in the UK, but how did that happen? Because it does seem like a big leap to go. Obviously, you'd experience in London, so I can imagine that's kind of where your mind automatically went. But was it a big leap across?
No, not really. We adopted the exact same procedure in that after we opened Dublin and it was an instant success, you know, there was huge demand. We said, okay, right, this is working in Dublin. And we looked at various cities in the UK and we said, they don't have safe deposit box facilities. So immediately we registered GlasgowVaults.co.uk, EdinburghVaults.co.uk, Leeds, Manchester, Liverpool, all the rest of it, to see what demand there was. And once again, certain cities stood out in that the number of inquiries we were getting kind of justified looking seriously at these cities. So the one that stood out initially was Glasgow. So we traveled to Glasgow. We noticed that a huge amount of the inquiries were coming from the Asian community. So the Pakistani and the Indian community. And did a little bit of research and we realized that all Asian ladies, when they get married, they have an awful lot of jewellery. They've got 24 carat gold jewellery. And there was no safe deposit box facilities in Glasgow. And the Asian community was being targeted by burglars because the burglars knew that there was a very good chance there was going to be Asian gold in the house.
Wow. Yeah, so the burglars had done market research.
Yeah, and they knew that, you know, you target an Asian community, you target an Asian house, there's a good chance there's gold in there.
Wow.
So 50% of the inquiries we were getting just in Glasgow were from the Asian community.
And that just happened organically. You were just getting all these inquiries. You're like, that's unusual.
All these inquiries. So what we did then was, as I said, we visited Glasgow. We contacted the local police, called into them and said, we're looking at opening a safe deposit box facility in Glasgow. We have one in Dublin already. And they said, wow, great idea. They said, you know, you don't realize how many people are being targeted based on their background, knowing that, you know, the Asian community is going to be targeted.
That's fascinating.
So we did the same thing. Took us a while to find the right location. We did. We're in the outskirts of an Asian community in Glasgow, about 2 miles south in an area called Pollock Shields. And once again, the inquiries were coming through. We built it. And we're learning on each facility, obviously. So built it and Glasgow went the same way as Dublin.
I think that's such an interesting revelation. Again, it comes back to your brilliant idea of getting your website up, get a little bit of traction first. You know, you don't have to build a house before you get the tenants. Like, use logic and develop a demand first. And then you learn so much from that. You learned that whole new niche.
Oh yeah. And since then it's the same process. You know, after Glasgow, we opened in Newcastle. Then we opened in Liverpool. We opened in Nottingham. We opened in Edinburgh just before COVID started. And as I said, we've just signed another lease on another city last week.
And does that ring through for the rest of the UK, or has there been different trends you've noticed as you move city to city?
Yeah, well, you see, in certain other cities, there are existing safe deposit box facilities already. So as I mentioned earlier, there's 20 of them in Liverpool. In Birmingham, there's 5 independent facilities. Right. In Manchester, there's 3 facilities. There are registered websites in those cities, but you're not getting as much demand because there's competitors there already.
So you kind of rolled it out bit by bit by bit. And how did you then decide to start another company?
Well, very quickly with Murray & Vaults. I worked in Murray & Vaults for the first few months, you know, meeting customers, helping them with their boxes, all the rest of it. And I noticed very quickly that we were carrying the boxes for some customers because they were so heavy, you know, and I was there, What have they got in these boxes?
You preempted my next question.
Yeah. And quickly realized that they're storing bullion, whether it's silver bullion or gold bullion. And, you know, we had customers coming in, you know, once a week. You get to know them.
And when you say bullion, just to someone who has no idea about gold or silver, what is that?
It's an awful lot of our customers in all our facilities store silver bullion. And gold bullion, gold bars, gold coins, silver bars, silver coins.
Okay.
And just got chatting to the customers and I said, where are you buying this bullion? And I said, oh, there's a couple of suppliers in Ireland and there's a couple of suppliers in the UK. I said, okay, fair enough. So I did a little bit more research on gold bullion. Also looked at other safe deposit box facilities around the world. And a lot of those also had a gold bullion service as part of their offering. So because the security is there, you know, you've got a safe deposit box facility fully insured with all the security protocols in place, there's no reason why you couldn't do offer a bullion service as well. So I spoke to a couple of other providers of safe deposit box facilities and I said, how's the gold bullion business going for you? And some people said it was excellent, some said it was you know, it was a nice add-on, but didn't make a fortune out of it. But, you know, we investigated it further and decided, let's give this a go. And we set up Murray & Gold. And that's been a huge success since, thankfully.
Makes total sense when you think about it logically. You know, if you're already in the vaults business, it kind of makes sense to go into the, if that's what most people put. I know you don't know what people put in the boxes, but if that's what most people are putting in, they have to be getting it somewhere.
Yeah, and, you know, it's a service that a lot of our customers are delighted with. So they buy gold from us, they collect it in Murray & Vaults and they put it straight into their box. And if they want to sell it a year later, they sell it to us in Murray & Gold as well. So the gold doesn't have to leave the premises.
So they physically buy gold off you. They actually get a little piece or a bar depending on how much they're buying.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
So they buy bars or coins.
And why do people buy gold these days?
It's really seen as a hedge. You know, people are worried about whether it's financial markets, whether it's geopolitical tensions. They're worried about the banking system. They're worried about weakness in euro, all the rest of it. So they're buying it kind of as a long-term investment in most cases. And gold is considered a safe haven. So when there is a crisis in the world, the price of gold tends to go up. So we're now kind of, here we are, August 2020, where we're in the middle of the COVID crisis. The gold price is at all-time highs, you know, so we've never been busier than we are now with Murray & Gold, you know, because even though it's at all-time highs, people still think it's going to go further. There's a lot of uncertainty out there. And when there's uncertainty, there's fear, and there is that flight to safety where people go, let's buy some gold.
When I said you were coming on, a few people messaged in. I asked it, people got questions, and that was one of the questions. Fabio Molli, who's actually been a guest on the podcast himself, he asked me to ask you, has it been a rush? Has it been a knock-on effect? Because people are obviously buying gold due to COVID, due to the panic, as you talked about there. Has it been a rush into buying gold and then subsequently buying safe deposit boxes?
Yeah, what we find is, you know, anyone that buys gold from us, approximately 90% of the people that buy gold from us also rent a safe deposit box to store the gold. Yeah. So,
and has spiked since March?
Oh, yeah. We've seen record volumes of gold over the last 3 months. You know, but on the other side, the safe deposit box business during the crisis has slowed down because everyone was at home. So if everyone's at home, they're not worried about about their valuables at home because they're there.
They're
not worried about a break-in or a burglary or whatever. So, but now that, you know, that the lockdown was lifted, demand for safe deposit boxes is shooting up again.
That's, yeah, that's a very interesting point. Were you able to keep going during the lockdown? Were you able to stay open? As
Banks have been offering safe deposit boxes for the last 100 years, you know, so it was deemed an essential service.
How do you manage yourself? I asked you this when you had two companies, going to ask you the same question again, because I find it very interesting. How do you split your time? I'm fascinated by people who are high achievers like yourself, who achieve a lot in a single day. How do you do that in terms of how do you maximize your return from each day, week, month? What's your process? Do you plan quarterly, weekly? What's your efficiency process?
Good question. I'd say I plan daily.
Okay.
Yeah. Kind of, I'm constantly looking at the various businesses. I suppose some of my team members would say I probably micromanage too much.
Okay.
And that's something I need to look at. But just having the eye on the ball all the time. And, you know, all the team know that customer service is critical. The customer experience is critical. So I'm anal about that, in that how can we make life easier for the customer? And that's what I spend most of my time doing. I always think from start with the customer and work back, you know, and what can you do to make life easier for the customer? Whether it's they're buying gold bullion off you, they're buying an engagement ring off you, they're renting a safe deposit box from you. How can you make life that little bit easier for the customer?
That's I just read that book, the Bezonomics book about Jeff Bezos and Amazon, and the singular focus being their customer.
Yeah,
that's it. That's all they care about. Start there.
Same.
Fascinating. Like I'm a maniacal, crazy focus on customer.
Yeah.
Starting there, and everything else builds underneath it.
So kind of, I keep an eye. I keep an eye on the business. I'm hands on. But at the same time, the part that I really enjoy is growing the business. But you have to keep an eye on the day-to-day and making sure the customer is happy. So if I see an email, if I see emails coming in from customers and they're all asking the same question, right, there's a problem, right? We need to, how do we solve that problem?
What does a typical week look like for you?
Ooh, pre-COVID. I would have been traveling.
Do both. Yeah, we'll do both.
Yeah.
It's such a weird world we live in now. We have to talk pre and during. Do pre-COVID first.
Listen, since I've worked for myself with Voltaire Diamonds, okay, for the first couple of years, I still had to travel over and back to the UK with Merrion Vols, Merrion Gold. Yeah, pre-COVID in Dublin Airport every week.
Okay.
You know, traveling over and back to the UK. Looking at other opportunities to grow the Merrion Vols business in mainland Europe. Spent a lot of time in the States late last year looking at various opportunities there for safe deposit boxes. So, yeah, pre-COVID, on the move all the time, looking for opportunities. Because an awful lot of my job can be done remotely. You know, I've everything on my laptop or on my phone. So I'm in touch with the staff on a daily basis in the various facilities. So yeah, pre-COVID, on the move. And then during COVID, I spent most of it down in South Kerry. My parents have a holiday home down there.
Not a bad spot to be retreating to, to be fair.
So I spent lockdown down in Kerry, and I decided, you know the saying, don't waste a good crisis. So I decided, right, I'm taking this opportunity to lose a little bit of weight and get fit. So I was down in Kerry for 3 months, and I was walking 15 to 20,000 steps a day, and clean living for 3 months. So I made the most of it.
And then looking forward, very hard to ask someone to make a forecast. What's kind of your thoughts for the next 6 to 12 months as this thing plays out? Where do you see it all going?
Well, it's funny in that we're seeing opportunities out there now. Over the last few months, we've been contacted by a couple of other independent safe deposit box facilities abroad who they're struggling. And, you know, they're asking us for help, or are we interested in joint ventures? So I'm actively looking at that at the moment. But, you know, we've got over 200 websites live around the world right now. So I know where the next 10 facilities are, where we're going to open. So I'm talking to, property agents in those cities, will be visiting those cities when we can travel again. Mm. But at the moment, it's lots of Zoom calls. But really excited about the safe deposit box business. And obviously every safe deposit box facility we open, we also do gold bullion. So right now the gold bullion for all our six facilities is centralized in Dublin. So a lot of work has gone into that. You know, so if you're in Nottingham and you want gold bullion, you're actually dealing with the team in Dublin.
Okay.
You know, so there's a lot of work that goes into that. But really just growing the vault business and the gold business, and obviously keeping an eye on Voltaire Diamonds as well. But always looking for the next opportunity.
Always, yeah. That's, if I had to sum you up, that'd be it. How do you unwind? How do you get away from it all? Because you mentioned there you got fit a little bit, but that was your first kind of mention of, say, an outside life. How do you get away from this?
You know, I enjoy work.
Mm. I can tell that already.
You know, it's
not work.
It's not work. Yeah. Okay, it is. You're problem solving. An awful lot of my role within the various businesses is problem solving. Mm. And there's always problems, you know, but thankfully nothing major. But, you know, you're constantly trying to solve problems or improve the way we do things. But I enjoy work. But listen, I've got a great social life. I've great friends. I love going out for dinner. Love socializing. I'm an avid reader of news. I'm a news junkie. You know, I love listening to business podcasts. So when I was in Kerry for the lockdown, literally had my headphones on, listening to various podcasts on business startups, etc. Love that. Mm. So
it's incredible the resources that are there now for niche interests, which would have been 5-10 years ago, it might have been very hard to find like an entrepreneurship podcast or a podcast specifically about like finance startups or something like that. Now there's such a niche for everything. It's amazing.
Yeah. Like I spent, as I said, the 3 months listening to business podcasts, and there's some fantastic ones out there, you know, on startups. I love listening to, you know, founders and what they did right, what they did wrong.
Exactly.
Because you learn so much from that.
On that, we're almost out of time, but on that, what mistake did you learn most from? A tricky question right at the end.
Yeah, kind of fortunate in that, touch wood, I haven't made that many mistakes. And any mistakes I've made, they haven't risked the business. Like I'm taking risks every day of the week, whether it's deciding, you know, do we advertise here? Do we spend money in this? Is it going to work? Is it not going to work? But I've had no major mistakes, you know, but, you know, attention to detail is critical, you know.
Do you consciously de-risk yourself though? You seem like you've thought a lot of stuff through before you even make a step. Do you consciously go, how do I de-risk this before you even start?
Yes, absolutely. I'm kind of looking for problems and solving them before they even happen. And I say that to my team all the time, you know, I might be anal about certain things, you know, about how we do something, you know, but I'm doing it so that there isn't a problem 6 months down the road, you know. So how do you prevent the problems from happening in the first place? And that's an awful lot of that is down to procedures, you know. So, and particularly when you're dealing with high value items, you know, whether it's diamonds or gold bullion, or even how you deal with safe deposit boxes, you know, what could go wrong? And okay, this could go wrong. Let's solve that problem now.
I love that. What book do you recommend? Each week we give away a book. All people have to do is to tag yourself. So who do you want them to tag online?
You can tag Marion Vaults.
Perfect. Tag Marion Vaults and tag myself online, and there'll be a chance of winning this book. What book has made an impact on you?
Well, given that this is a kind of part of a business podcast, one book that I really enjoyed, and I still refer to it occasionally, is What They Don't Teach You in Harvard Business School.
I haven't read that, but it pops up quite a bit.
Yeah, it's a bestseller on Amazon, you know, five-star reviews and all the rest of it. And it's kind of like common sense advice, you know, for entrepreneurs. And it's stuff that you probably wouldn't learn in business school either.
Okay.
Definitely worth a read.
Love that. I think that's common sense is not common is one of my favorite phrases.
And you know who said that? Voltaire.
Really?
Yeah.
It was meant to be. What a perfect end. Seamus, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you.
And that was episode 63 of the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. Every Monday, we also have the Ideas Lab coming out every single week, along with a newsletter. So if you're not subscribed, go to my website, mrgaryfox.com, and you'll get a link every Monday to the Ideas Lab podcast and also all the links and ideas behind the story on that podcast. It really helps generating business ideas and helps you start the week strong. I will see you next week for episode 64. Until then, be safe.